and the inspection is actually at your behest, isn't it? You and your computer program. You bitch, I thought. Just because my computer program showed a possible problem, she's blaming me for it. Now I've either got to risk my neck or show everybody that I'm a coward. Rodriguez leaned across the narrow space separating us and grabbed my knee in a rough, friendly way. Come on, Mr. Humphreys, it won't be so bad. I'll be with you every step of the way, and you'll be able to tell your grandchildren about it. If I live long enough to have grandchildren, I thought. But I swallowed my fear and said as calmly as I could, Sure, it ought to be exciting. It certainly was. Basically, our task was to check all the connectors that held the gondola to the gas envelope above us. It was a job that a plumber could do. It didn't call for any special training. But we'd be outside, in a cloud of sulfuric acid droplets that was nearly 100 degrees Celsius, more than 50 kilometers above the ground. Rodriguez spent 2 intense hours briefing me on what we had to do in the virtual reality simulator. 6 main struts had to be checked out, and 6 secondary ones. They connected the gondola to the gas shell. If they failed under stress, we would go plunging down to the red-hot surface like an iron anvil. Akira Sakamoto, our dour life support technician, personally helped me into my spacesuit. It was the same one I had used when we transferred from Truax, but now its exterior had been sprayed with a special heat-resistant ceramic. The suit seemed stiffer to me than before, although Sakamoto insisted the ceramic in no way interfered with limb motion. Without a word, without any discernible expression on his chunky, broad face, he slipped the safety harness around my waist and clicked it in place, then made certain both its tethers were properly looped so they wouldn't trip me as I tried to walk. Dr. Waller helped me to check out Rodriguez, who got into his suit unassisted but needed somebody to go around to make certain all the seals were okay and the electrical lines and life support hoses hooked up properly from the backpack. Marguerite came down to the airlock, too, and watched in silence as we suited up. I was trembling slightly as I wriggled into the ungainly suit, which was now sort of silvery from its new ceramic coating. But I realized with some surprise that my trembling wasn't so much fear as excitement. I knew I should have been scared out of my bleeding wits, but somehow I wasn't. I was going to do something, something that had to be done, and even though it was dangerous, I found myself actually looking forward to it. In the back of my mind, a jeering voice was saying famous last words, "How many fools have looked forward to the adventure that killed them?" But with Marguerite watching me, I didn't seem to care. I thought I saw a hint of admiration in her eyes. At least I hoped it was admiration, and not amusement at the foolish machismo I was exhibiting. Outside. Okay, we do it just the way we did in the sim. In my helmet earphones, Rodriguez's voice sounded harsh and tight, definitely more tense than his usual easygoing attitude. I nodded, then realized he couldn't see me through the tinted fishbowl helmet, so I said, Right, just like a real astronaut, I thought. He went into the airlock ahead of me, cycled it down, and then went outside. Once the outer airlock hatch closed again and the lock refilled with ship's air, the inner hatch indicator light turned green. My spacesuit was definitely stiff. Even with the servo motors at my elbow and shoulder joints grinding away, it took a real effort to move my arms. Before I could reach the airlock control stud with my gloved hand, Sakamoto pressed it, his beefy face dour as usual. But he made a little hissing bow, the first sign of respect I had ever seen from him. Thanks, I said as I stepped into the airlock, hoping he could hear me through the helmet. As the airlock cycled down and the outer hatch slid open, I had to remind myself that this was going to be different from an EVA in space. This would be more like doing steelwork at the top of a tremendously tall skyscraper. If I made a false step, I wouldn't simply float away from the ship. I'd plunge screaming to the ground 50 kilometers below. Take it slow and easy, Rodriguez told me. I'm right here. Hand me your tether before you step out. I could see his space-suited form clinging to the hand grips set into the gondola's outer hull beside the hatch. Both his tethers were clipped to its rungs. I handed him one end of my right-hand tether. He clipped it to a rung beside his own. Okay now, just the way we did in a sim. Come on out. The good thing was we were enveloped in the cloud, so I didn't have to worry about looking down. There was nothing to see out there except a blank yellow-gray limbo. but I could feel the ship shuddering and pitching in the currents of wind. "Just like rock climbing," Rodriguez said with an exaggerated heartiness. "Piece of cake!" "When did you do any rock climbing?" I asked as I planted one booted foot on a rung of the ladder. "Me? Are you kidding? When I get up more than 50 meters, I want an airplane surrounding me." I had never gone rock climbing either. Risking one's neck for the fun of it has always seemed the height of idiocy to me. But this was different, I told myself. There was a job to be done. I was making a real contribution to the mission now, not just cowering in my quarters while others did the work. Still, it was scary. I suppose Rodriguez could have done it all by himself, but long decades of experience dictated that it was far safer to have two people go out together, even if one of them was a neophyte. Besides, with me out there, we could cut the time for the inspection almost in half. That in itself made the whole job a lot safer. In a way, the pressure of the Venusian atmosphere helped us. In space, with nothing outside a spacesuit's fabric but vacuum, a spacesuit tends to balloon up and get stiff. That's why we had the miniature servo motors on the suit's joints and gloves to assist our muscles in bending and flexing. Even at this high altitude, though, the atmospheric pressure was enough to make it almost easy to move around in the suits. Even the gloves flexed fairly easily. The servo motors of the spiny exoskeleton on the backs of the gloves hardly had to exert themselves at all. One by one, Rodriguez and I checked the braces and struts that held the gondola to the gas envelope. All the welds seemed solid to my eyes. Neither of us could find any sign of damage or deterioration. One of the hoses that fed hydrogen from the separator to the envelope seemed a bit looser than Rodriguez liked. He worked on it for several minutes with a wrench from the tools clipped to his harness, dangling from a support strut like a monkey in a banana tree. As I watched Rodriguez working, I checked the thermometer on the wrist of my suit. To my surprise, it read only a few degrees above freezing. Then I remembered that we were still 50-some kilometers above the ground. On Earth, we'd be high above the stratosphere, on the fringe of outer space. Here on Venus, we were in the middle of a thick cloud of sulfuric acid droplets. Not too far below us, the atmosphere heated up quickly to several hundred degrees. Dangling out there in the open reminded me of something, but I couldn't put my finger on it, until at last I remembered watching a video years ago, when I'd been just a child, about people hang gliding off some seaside cliffs in Hawaii. I had burned with jealousy then, watching them having so much fun while I was stuck in a house almost all the time, too frail to try such an adventure, and too scared, I've got to admit. But here I was, on another world, racing in the wind 50 clicks high. "That's done," Rodriguez said as he returned the wrench to its place on his belt. But he fumbled it, and the wrench dropped out of sight. One instant it was in his hand, then, oops, and it was gone. I realized that was what would happen to me if my tethers failed. "Is that it?" I asked. "Are we done?" "I ought to check the envelope for any signs of ablation from the entry heat," Rodriguez said. "You can go back inside." Without even thinking about it, I replied, "No, I'll go with you." So we clambered slowly up the rungs set into the massive curving bulk of the gas envelope, with that hot wind rushing past us. I knew the atmospheric pressure was too thin up at this altitude to really push us, yet I felt as if I was being nudged, harried, shaken by the wind. It was slow going, climbing one rung, unclipping one tether and snapping it on a higher rung, then stepping up again and unclipping the other tether. Just like mountain climbers, we never moved a step until we had both tethers locked on safely. I could hear Rodriguez's breathing in my earphones, puffing hard with each step he took. Duchamp was listening in on everything, of course. But I knew that if we got into trouble, there was nothing she or anyone else could do about it in time. It was just Rodriguez and me out here on our own. It was frightening and exhilarating at the same time. At last we got to the long catwalk that ran along the top of the envelope. Rodriguez knelt down and activated a switch that raised the flimsy-looking safety rail which ran the length of the metal mesh walkway. Then we fastened our tethers to the rail. It stood waist-high all the way down the catwalk from nose to tail. A row of cleats projected from the edge of the walkway, like the bits on a racing yacht where you tie down the lines from the sails.
"Top of the world,"
Rodriguez said cheerfully. "Yeah," I said, my voice definitely shaky. Together we walked to the bulbous nose of the envelope where the big heat shield had been connected. I could see the stumps of the rods that had held the shield in place, blackened from the explosive bolt.